Free throw's no good. The rebound loops to the floor. It's grabbed by Moore. Out to Galloway. Now to Moore. Down to 8 seconds. 7 seconds to go to Davis. Davis with five. Checks the clock. Ball knocked away. Stolen by Draymond. Draymond's foul with 2.3 to go. Draymond knocked it away and he stole the game.
We're going to bring you on to our huddle.
You are in the Warriors Huddle with me, Bram. With me, as always, my boy and producer, Scotty D.
Scotty D. Here, you kind of forced me into that one.
Yeah, I could tell that you didn't feel real comfortable with it. Has anybody actually called you Scotty D outside of the podcast world? Has it picked up anywhere in your life?
Somebody at work has called me that.
Yeah.
Well done. I really appreciate that dipping into my work life.
Did your boy Lewis call you and say they shouldn't be doing this? This is totally out of control.
I had lunch with Lewis today and he said, stick by the Dunleavy take. So that's what I'm doing.
Good for you, Lewis. One last non-Warriors take before we jump into the focus. I had an opportunity to listen to our last show, even though it's been like a year since we've recorded. And right after the signature good, which I look forward to, there was a blooper of me screwing up. And here's why I'm bringing it up to you. I know that we agreed that if I screwed up in the beginning of an episode, that screw up would appear at the end of the episode. But I think we both know I did not screw up at the beginning of last episode. What's up with you including that in the last one?
Because you told me that you wanted to include a blooper regardless, so just to start the tradition.
I mean, we didn't set it up. It made me sound terrible. I mean, I feel like that was a little scandalous. I better not hear any bloopers at the end of this one because this is our first take.
I wouldn't push too hard because I have a vault of them
ready
to unleash.
I've been there with you. I know how many times I've screwed up, but let's wait till it's a new one before we include it on a show. Enough of our small talk before we get an avalanche of you've got hate mail. Let's jump into the Warriors focus. We're fresh off a pretty satisfying win last night where they beat New Orleans. A team they were supposed to beat didn't really look that good throughout with the exception of Steph, but it ended in a remarkably satisfying way with what I think Draymond cementing, at least early here in the year, his bid for Defensive Player of the Year. My count, that's four games he's cemented or won with his defense. He had a steal and a block in the final minute against Phoenix to win. He stole the inbound pass against Milwaukee and prevented the Alphabet from getting the ball and a chance to beat us. He blocked both Schroeder and Kent Bazemore against Atlanta. And last night, he stole the ball from Anthony Davis. So that's four in a row.
Yeah, well, and the great thing about this one was it happened on East Coast time. Okay. So there may have been people who are going to be voting on this award who actually watched the game.
Thank God you said that. So I do, in fact, remember you and Rusty saying he's not going to win Defensive Player of the Year because of the East Coast bias and people are not going to be paying attention on a national level. With that in mind, let me play you a little clip from Rachel Nichols on ESPN where she explains why she thinks Draymond should win Defensive Player of the Year.
Guys, Draymond Green, he warned everyone. Seriously, last month, he explicitly came out in the media and warned other teams, do not try to win a game with a play drawn up against me, which from other players might sound like trash talk or senseless bravado, but it ain't trash when it's the truth, baby. Take a look at what happened last night when Anthony Davis, one of the most gifted players in the NBA, tried to go at Draymond to tie the game in the final seconds. I mean, that's straight up robbery, right? And it's hardly the first time. We are only 7 weeks into the NBA season, and he has been killing teams at the end of games night after night. Remember this against the Hawks, poor Dennis Schroeder? And then former Warrior Kent Bazemore, he got the same treatment on the next trip down the court. Or against the Bucks, again. Checking one of the league's best young stars, Giannis Antetokounmpo. Nope, sorry. Draymond will just be taking that ball away now. Thank you very much. This is why Draymond is the front runner for Defensive Player of the Year. It's not just his defense, it's his defense in the clutch and that he can do it guarding 1 through 5.
Kind of blindsided you with that quote. I mean, I give you the sound beforehand, but I'm pretty sure you hadn't actually heard it before this. Does the fact that he is getting national attention make you want to, I don't know, backtrack at all and say maybe this guy will win it?
I mean, it's not going to be surprising if he wins it, right? Like, him and Kawhi are the two people that you would put at the top. So one of them is going to win it. Like, if somebody else comes out of the woodwork and wins Defensive Player of the Year, that's going to be surprising. But I think it's known that Draymond, and I think he's finished second place in the last couple of voting. So,
let me be more specific. You guys said he would probably deserve it, but no one in the East Coast would find out because they're all asleep and the national media won't report on it. We just heard a report from the national media. You still worried about the East Coast bias thing?
Oh, totally.
Get out. What?
You have not lived on the East Coast. I have lived on the East Coast. I can tell you there is a massive East Coast bias. It's the same reason why he hasn't won it in years past.
The reason he hasn't won it in years past is because they weren't the same level of super team and he wasn't angling specifically for it. I still disagree with you, although I respect the idea that you could listen to a national broadcast right now, right here, together, and still tell me that the East Coast bias is going to reign.
I might be voting for Kevin Durant as defensive player in the year, the way that he's blocking shots. I mean, how about his block on amazing. Anthony Davis? I mean, that was amazing. And I think he leads the team in blocks. So what, your defensive player of the year doesn't even lead his team in blocks?
I'm sorry. Are you pivoting and now saying that Kevin Durant deserves it more than Draymond Green?
I'm just wondering why your defensive player of the year is not even leading his team in blocks.
Because he guards every single position, because he talks major shit and backs it up, because he is the reason they have won each of those games that I just listed off. Kevin Durant is amazing, and the block that he had against Anthony Davis just last night reinforced the idea that maybe the Warriors aren't so weak defensively in the front court as everybody thought they were going to be. But the concept that he's as good as Draymond on defense is not even something you believe in, man. Instead, let me chase down a reason why I think he might not win it, and it's not the East Coast bias. I'm not worried about that. I do think he's going to get enough national exposure. But this is going to bring us back a couple of weeks, and I apologize we didn't get a chance, this is to the audience, to talk about it when it happened because we didn't record last week. But this is back to the Houston loss. I'm going to take us all the way to the second overtime. I think the Warriors are, what, down 2 or 3 or something. I don't remember, unfortunately enough. Draymond gets fouled by Harden, right? And then they start replaying it, and they ultimately called a flagrant foul on
Ridiculous.
Draymond. Okay, because his leg got kicked up. Now, no question that wasn't a flagrant. None. Zero. But here's what terrifies me about that. What it illustrates is that there's a national perception of him being a dirty player. I don't think anybody else gets that flagrant in that situation. Certainly not at the end of double overtime. And if that's how they perceive him, you know, if that's how the league overall is looking at him, I think that's the only reason some of these accomplishments might be lost and he might not win the Defensive Player of the Year.
Let me throw out a name from basketball past who had, I think, is even more of a character than Draymond, and that would be Dennis Rodman.
Yeah.
He won Defensive Player of the Year on the Pistons, and you know he hadn't quite gone down the path that he was going to be going down in the years to follow. But
how dirty was he? Because I'm picking up what you're putting down. That makes sense to me. But was he viewed? He was always viewed as weird, right? And always kind of off color. But was he viewed as dirty?
He was a member of the Detroit Pistons Bad Boys team. Of course, he was viewed as dirty. Every single player on that team, aside from Joe Dumars, was thought to be dirty.
But he never had to sit in the finals games. I mean, like, at that point, dirty was almost a good thing, right? I mean, like, in that era of basketball, it wasn't a downside.
You certainly didn't have the replays and the scrutiny that happens today. I mean, it's kind of... I mean, yeah, we recorded that night of the Houston game, so I was at home editing, watching with the sound off.
Yeah.
I didn't even know why they kept showing this replay. I thought it was something to do with his hand hitting Harden's face.
Yep.
It was ridiculous.
I had the exact same circumstance, and I ultimately had to rewind it again, turn it back up, and then started screaming at the screen when I understood what was happening. But I cut you off. So is your ultimate point with Dennis Rodman, since he won Defensive Player of the Year and had kind of an ugly perception, you're not worried about that perception with Draymond?
I think that Defensive Player of the Year is something that's determined by votes, that I don't think the league is necessarily has its hand fully in that decision.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think the league, I'm sure it's determined by votes. What it showed me is that outside of Golden State, right, outside of Warriors land, where we all love everything he does, even when he's kicking people, especially if it's James Harden, people look at his antics in a different way. And maybe it's just limited to the refs because they have of anger towards him. But if there are other writers out there and other people who do have votes who view this in the way that they did, that's the one thing I think they can hold them back. And here's another concern. I don't think Draymond gives a shit about changing their perception. So after that, right, after the Harden thing, here's what he had to say. Quote, I just laugh at it because it's funny how you can tell me how I get hit and how my body is supposed to react. I didn't know the people in the league office were that smart when it came to your body movement. I'm not sure if they took kinesiology and all that stuff for their positions to kind of tell you how your body is going to react when you get hit at certain positions. Or you can go up and you got guys that jump to the ceiling. And I'm sure a lot of these people that make these rules can't can't touch the rim. Yet they tell you that you're way up there in the air and which way your body is supposed to react. That is a gigantic F you. And like satisfying one.
Oh, yeah.
But that's not someone who's like, ooh, maybe they don't like me and I need to dial this back. That's someone saying, F you, you guys don't even play basketball. Don't tell me how my body is supposed to move when I get hit.
Well, there's a lot of people in the league office who have played. I mean, Kiki Vandeweghe has played. I mean, he definitely took shots at him maybe not being able to jump as high.
He could probably touch the rim. I imagine Kiki can touch the rim.
Yeah, no, I mean, he was really tall. But this is kind of, I think, exhibit one of how Draymond has said, I don't care at all what happened in the offseason. I'm kind of doubling down on who I am. I mean, if you saw last night, after he gets the Anthony Davis steal, the camera kind of pans around the different Warrior players, and it shows Steph, and he's kind of like thinking about what the next play is going to be. It showed, I don't know, maybe Durant, again, not saying anything. And then it goes to Draymond, and he's talking to somebody. I don't know who he was talking to, but he's always talking.
I think he just knows that everyone's asleep in the East Coast, so it doesn't matter what the hell he does. Also, thank you for not making fun of the way I said the word kinesiology. I have no...
I didn't, because I don't know how
you said it. No idea how to say that. Before we move on from this game, a quick fuck you for me. I have DirecTV way better than my Xfinity thing. You know, I've had problems with them, as the audience knows. DirecTV came with this app that allows you to access various things. So I was all fired up last night. Game started at 5. I don't get home until a lot later. So I use the app to record. I feel hella proud of myself. I'm like on top of the technological mountain. I get home. Goddamn game is not recorded. I had to watch it at like 12 on this terrible replay. Like, I understand that technological difficulties happen. I'm willing to accept that. But there has to be some kind of accountability. I want the guy, whoever it is who invented this app, to have something not so terrible publicly happen to him. I want him to have a video of him getting shit on by a bird and then have it be like publicly circulated or something. There has to be some accountability for this. I'm just not okay with it. Share my anger in this. I mean, if anybody can really dig into completely neurotic anger, I know it's you, Scotty D. Tell me I'm right.
It's the worst of all circumstances
because
you're riding so high off this new technology. I mean, I can't tell you the number of times where I've gotten some new technology or whatnot, and I try to, like, I say to my wife, like, okay, now, like, we're all set up, ready to go, and, like, then it doesn't work, and it's just demasculating, embarrassing.
I got home hella fired up to watch the game. I pull up the list. It's not there. I started sweating like I had, like, some kind of foreign disease, man. It was not a good look. So if anybody out there works for DirecTV, give me a call, and let's work out how you can get pooped on by a bird and then get that out there. Not everything has been phenomenal since the last time we recorded. The Warriors are 22-4, two games ahead of the Spurs, sitting atop the Western Conference, but they've also lost two games and a player. Zaza Pachulia has a right wrist contusion, and the Warriors lost to both Memphis and Houston. Let's start with Zaza. My understanding is x-rays came back negative, so it's not a break. He still has to have an MRI that's scheduled for tonight, maybe some ligament damage. There's no news about when he is definitively coming back. As of right now, they're still guessing. You worried about the injury?
I'm a little surprised that it's taken this long to get him back, because that doesn't sound like the type of thing that would require a lot of time to recover from. But he clearly, I mean, he's not ready. He doesn't seem like the type of guy who's going to be nursing injury. So it's obviously something a little more serious than we thought, and I think the team really misses him.
Do you really?
Yeah, I definitely do, because you look at that Minnesota game, and you realize how much Zaza does sort of by just not mucking up everything.
Yeah.
And the Warriors they've gotten into a point in this season where I felt like they kind of all started to understand their roles and where things were working smoothly, and then to disrupt that, I think they found it really difficult.
That's what worries me. The actual loss of Pachulia's skill set is something the Warriors are well suited to overcome, and they're so damn talented, they'll figure out a way to get around him. What I don't like is that it prevents us from kind of continuing this continuity, right? He's missed, I think, four games since, and we've had different starters every single time. We saw JaVale last night. We've seen Kevon Looney. We even saw Andy Varejão.
Wow, yeah, that was a disaster.
Well, that's when we got our ass smashed by Memphis, so I blame Andy V for that. But for as long as we aren't having set lineups, then this team is going to be prevented from reaching the really lofty heights I think they're capable of, which is why I want him back. I don't like that we have, I don't know, like a barrier to our chemistry. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and Steve Kerr also, like, he put in Varejão. I think he said something about how he didn't want to disrupt the bench rotation or whatnot. Yeah. you can't do that. Like, you just can't do that. Like,
you mean play Andy Varejao? Oh, I completely agree.
Yeah, why are you, like, hurting the starters' ability to do what they need to do by putting in somebody who I don't know why Varejao was on the team.
I had flashbacks to Game 7, and I'm not going to discuss those flashbacks because I don't feel like sobbing here on the air, so we can just quickly move on. Hopefully we'll see Zaza back real soon. As of now, like I said, it's indefinite. Which brings us to the two losses. They weren't that close. They lost to Memphis 110-89, and then we already talked about the double overtime loss to Houston. These don't concern me. Really, not at all. More than anything, I think it underlines last year's accomplishments with 73 wins than it makes me worried about this year's team. NBA is filled with really good NBA or really good basketball players. That's just a factual reality. You come out and play zero perimeter defense like you did against Memphis, you're going to lose. You come out and turn the ball over willy-nilly like they did against Houston, again, you're going to lose. Those are things that they can, I think, shore up. The only thing that this really cemented for me is how much I continue to hate James Harden. So when they're beating Houston, I don't really get emotionally involved. You know what I mean? They beat him like 8 straight times. It's hard to hate somebody. When you're losing to James Harden, I think he's the most annoying superstar in the league, bar none.
More annoying than LeBron?
More annoying than LeBron. He's not the same kind of crybaby face that LeBron can bring to it, but he's got this weirdo sense of entitlement and his terrible beard and his weird herky-jerky game that's designed to get him free throws. There's just something about him that makes me want to punch his face. And I mean, he could beat the hell out of me. I'm not telling you, like, I would actually want to do that, but I have that urge as I'm watching him play basketball, which is not a natural feeling, man.
I mean, the antics he uses is definitely... It's like kind of the problem that soccer had for so long, and why I think so many U.S. people had trouble with soccer is like that kind of flopping, the over exaggeration. It's those type of things, and you know, don't get me wrong, I think soccer can be a great
stop
game.
Right there. Oh my God, stop right there. I'm not having this discussion on this show. We're not talking about the upsides of soccer. I don't care.
But that's the type of thing where he does frustrate me. I mean. But the guy, I mean, he's good.
Oh, he's good. He is.
And he has some very unique moves that are, I think,
super
something. Something that I do want to rewind.
No, that's not what you're going to say.
Yeah. Something I want to rewind and actually watch again. Like, you know, how did he take that dribble and pick it? Like, it's unique.
I can't believe that as you were starting to talk about soccer, I started thinking, I wish he was talking about the Wizards. That's how ugly that take got for me. I've sidetracked us. Give me your take on the losses. Are you worried about them, or are they just throwaway, they happen in the course of an 82-game season?
I'm not too worried about them. That's kind of the short answer. A little bit more detail. Kevin Durant, I mean, he's the type of guy that you are supposed to rely on in those games where Steph and Clay and the offense just isn't clicking, because he can do his one-on-one thing, and he's supposed to be your kind of go-to guy in that regard. And you saw in the Memphis game, that was non-existent. I know he kind of was in a shooting slump during this road trip, but I hope that in those type of games that happen in the future where just the offense isn't really working, we can sort of fall back and rely on him a little more.
I think it illustrates that these guys are still learning how to deal with situations, right? I mean, now they know how to win big. They've kind of figured out what the rotations need to be when everybody's playing well, and how to share the ball and how to get 30 assists in a game when the ball's going through the net. They know that now. But they haven't had any circumstances where they're getting their ass kicked. Not one up until now, with the exception of the opener, right? And it makes sense to me that they've got to learn how to deal with those too. When the shots aren't falling, what happens? Who do you turn to? You know, I can imagine KD feeling like, do I take over? Do I defer to Steph?
Because he only took 13 shots in that game.
That's right.
Like, you need him to take more than 13 shots in a game where everyone's struggling.
No, that makes sense to me. And so I think that ultimately this could even be a learning building block, because you figure out what to do when the rest of the shots aren't falling, right? Do you feel at fault for the Houston loss? Here's what I mean. The last time we recorded, and this shows how long it's been, it was literally the evening of the Houston loss. And we were recording as the game was being played, and the first topic we hit was, my God, the Warriors are unbeatable. Maybe the best team in the league right now. And then it led to the loss. I'm a jinx guy. You know, maybe it's because I feel like I'm at the center of the universe with everything I do, but I feel like my words in that conversation helped the Warriors lose. Are you a jinx guy, or are you a little less crazy?
I'm a huge jinx guy, which really frustrates my wife. But
you bring up jinxes with your wife?
The number of times is too many to count. But you are to blame for it. I tried the reverse jinx. by trying to like backpedal and say it's too early.
Unbelievable.
You keep doubling down. And that's the thing about the jinx is you truly believed it. And that's why I couldn't counteract it even with my reverse jinx.
I still believe it. Thankfully, they're not playing tonight. I still believe everything I said. God, I want to hear more about like the jinx conversations you've had with your wife. Maybe we need to make like a full segment out of that or something. Anything come to mind? Any recent jinx conversations you've had?
The most recent thing comes to mind is the time we recorded after the first two games of the NBA Finals where I just jinxed the Warriors completely by saying it was a done deal.
And you brought that up to your wife?
No, it was unrelated to my wife.
Oh, no, that's what I want is wife stories. You don't have to do it now. Think about it. We'll recover hopefully the next time we talk. I still take these losses hard. So, okay. Everything I just said, I believe in. Still think this team is great, and I thought those losses meant nothing. Now, that said, after each loss, I had difficulty sleeping, and I don't know, like, that's not a healthy response. It meant nothing. It's not in the playoffs. It's not keeping them from doing anything. I still think they're a great team, and literally that evening, I'm, like, frustrated. I think that's kind of like a psychosis, man. It's not something I'm proud of. It's not normal, is it? Like, did you have those problems?
No. I think that's like playoff level anxiety that you're already having during the season. That's sort of what I felt last year during the whole 73 run because every loss felt so monumental.
Yeah, sure.
Like this can't happen. No. Yeah. But this year I'm just trying to take a much more relaxed stance, seeing it, this is a learning moment for them. Hopefully this just makes them stronger.
Is this a reverse jinx thing? I see what you're doing. I'm picking up. You don't even have to talk about it anymore.
Don't acknowledge the reverse jinx because that just blows it up.
Let's get to more positive conversations. And let's talk about the Clippers game, you know, ever so briefly. So Houston is not a team I need to worry about. Memphis is not a team we need to worry about. The Clippers, at least early in the season, when they're sprinting out to this great record, everybody said they were a team we had to worry about. Turns out that's completely wrong. The thing that was really satisfying to me about that Clipper game is that the usual suspects, our stars, all played poorly. Steph couldn't hit a shot. Durant was out of sorts. Clay was kind of in a 60-point hangover. You know, like none of them played well. And we still came out there and donkey smashed those fools. It was never close at any point. And there's something that is so satisfying about that. And also, we saw the difference between a impressive and flashy power forward and one who wins. Blake Griffin can jump over a car and dunk. And if you have a car and you need a dunk to happen over that car, he's your guy. Draymond cannot. I am sure he couldn't jump over a scooter and dunk. But what do you know what he can do? Win games. And if I had to pick between the two, I will pick Draymond 20 times out of 10 every single time.
That was such a satisfying game. And Draymond just making Blake Griffin completely disappear, extremely satisfying. Beating Doc Rivers, always the best. I mean, that was a great game.
I don't know if this helps or hurts me, but I got to mention it. So we've been in this fight about whether or not JaVale McGee reminds you of DeAndre Jordan. And I will say after watching the game that DeAndre Jordan is a much better player than JaVale McGee. But that game was televised on ESPN. It had my not favorite commentator, Mark Jackson. And towards the end, Mark Jackson commented and said, well, that DeAndre Jordan, the other way around, JaVale McGee could play a similar role for the Warriors that DeAndre Jordan plays for the Clippers. Literally taking the words out of my mouth. Does that help me? I mean, like, are you guys willing to concede? We'll get back to Rusty when we can, and we should have put this up front. Rusty is dealing with some health problems right now. We're hoping to have him back remarkably soon. And obviously, he couldn't join us this week, and our best thoughts go out to him. But for now, if he was here, I'd be telling Rusty, look, Mark Jackson agrees with me. Why don't you? You're the only person in front of me. Let me put it at you.
Yeah, why don't you just keep aligning yourself with different Mark Jackson takes? I'll let you go down that road all day long. I'm happy to.
Smart man. Mark Jackson, not you. Smart man. And we don't always see eye to eye, but in the whole JaVale DeAndre deal, he has a little insight. And apparently you guys just don't know anything. Another feel-good thing I wanted to bring up, and this happened while the Warriors were in Memphis, and I think after they lost to the Grizzlies, but Ian Clark, seventh guy off the bench, our third guard, had his jersey, his high school jersey, retired by his alma mater, Germantown High School, which is in Tennessee. And the reason I'm bringing it up is that obviously he shows up. They have a big ceremony for him, and they've got the jersey that they pull into the rafters, and that's all really cool, and I'm sure it meant a lot to someone like Ian Clark. But he wasn't there alone. Kevin Durant went with him. Draymond Green went with him. Steph Curry went with him. Andre Iguodala went with him. And what this, I don't think that would happen on any team, right? Pick an NBA team, even like Philadelphia. I don't think it happens regardless of success. it is remarkably special when you're talking about a super team. You know, for the 96 Bulls, when Dickie Simpkins had his high school jersey retired, I'm fairly certain Jordan didn't show up, right? When Judd Bushler had a baby, I don't think Scottie Pippen was there for, like, the bris. You know, like, the idea that these guys not only enjoy each other's company, but support each other like this is so unusual and so cool.
I hope that the Warriors have a bris that we can test your theory on to see who shows up at that.
So I had prepared that joke before, and it was supposed to be baby shower. And I mean, I have it right here, and I decided to go bris at the last second. What do you think? Did it land for you?
I have no idea what that is.
You don't want to. Don't look it up. For people out there, don't look it up. Just let it go. Trust me on that.
So I think it is great. I mean, these guys are on a road trip, and it's a chance to, like, hang out with each other, and the fact that, or see other things. And I mean, the fact that they're going to hang out and go to an event at a high school is just phenomenal. Like, they probably would show up at a bris, because is there anything more boring than just a random high school jersey ceremony?
I see your personality type going, supporting people. I think me, I'd like to think I would be there, but I might come up with a last minute excuse. Like a text, I'm not feeling very good, or like, I had ribs last night because we're in Memphis, something. Some bunk excuse that would disappear like at the last moment.
Even if it was a bris?
Well, not a bris. Again, don't look that up. I refuse to participate in like the bris continuing humor, because it's just a terrible thing. All right, let me whisk us away from this before I get sucked down any other bris holes. And I know it's been far too long, and everyone's already talked about it a million times, but there's no way we can allow a Golden State Warrior to put up 60 points in 29 minutes without us talking about it on this show. So for those who have forgotten, here is a quick audio take to remind you of Clay's accomplishments against the Pacers.
Clay gets free off the screen. Jumper right side. Good! He's got 60! He's the fourth Warrior ever to get 60 points. And the last Warrior to get 60 was Rick Barry back in 1974.
I opened up the stuff about Draymond asking you for an apology. I talked about DeAndre Jordan and JaVale McGee. I think Rusty owes me an apology. Let me go ahead and fire off an apology on my own. I have been giving Rusty shit all year about whether or not Clay deserves to be in the elite of the elite conversation. I think he's the best shooting guard in the league. I think this helped develop it, or helped me see that at least. And I couldn't have been more impressed.
That was crazy. I mean, 29 minutes? I mean, I think by minutes was on pace to maybe reach 100 at one point. Like at halftime, he had played X amount of minutes and had X number of points. That is scary.
They've got that sports track system in Oracle where they got the cameras up top that look down, and they keep track of a number of saber metrics. And one of the things that it told us about that game is that Clay only had the ball in his hands for 90 seconds, for a minute and 30 seconds, and he was able to turn that into 60 points. That's insanity. You know, and it's also testament to the team that they're able to run a system that gets him open, that he doesn't have to develop, you know, on his own. But you know, I would be very surprised if anyone's been able to get that many points per second in the NBA.
I was surprised at how he did it with relatively few three-pointers. Like, you watch it, and it is actually like a tons of cuts of basket. He did like four of these weird reverse layups on the right to left side. Were you more impressed by the 60 points or the 37 and a quarter?
The 60, because at that point Clay was on my fantasy basketball team. The 37, I didn't
okay,
have
put
any,
that
like,
put
game.
That aside.
That's hard for me. That's hard. No, I 60 because it is most recent in my memory. And I think neither are going to be touched. I think someone will score more than 60. I know that that's already happened between Wilt and Kobe, but I don't think they're going to do it in three quarters, and I'm positive they will not do it in 90 seconds.
Yeah, well, I thought the 37 was actually more impressive. It had just a level of insanity that this one didn't, because you watched the game. It was kind of a sneaky 60, if that can be possible, but that 37-point quarter was just nuts. I mean, everyone knew, like, this is outrageous.
I'm going to go ahead and say it wasn't a sneaky 60. I mean, the entire arena was going batshit crazy, and everyone on the sidelines was going nuts, and I mean, I feel like it got a lot of attention.
It did eventually, but
I mean,
still,
immediately, I would say. Is that what you mean by eventually, immediately?
I think the 37 points was more impressive.
I remember that part.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's only been 10 seconds since you said it, so that part is really fresh.
All right, you'll never change my opinion on that.
Fair enough. Before we get too deep into this, let's get another person's opinion who probably means both of ours, or means more than both of ours. Here's Kevin Durant on his view of the accomplishment.
Kevin, 60 points is obviously impressive, but to do it in 29 minutes, I mean, how much more impressive is that? That kid, over.
I don't even know what to say. It was crazy, you know, because he probably had the ball in his hands, not even 2 minutes combined the whole game, just coming off, catching and shooting, being in the right spots, cutting. I think what got him going early on was those fast break layups. When you see the ball go through the rim like that, give high percentage points, you know, it opens up the rest of your game. So he got about 3 or 4 layups early in the game, and it got him going, and we just kept feeding him, man, He knocked down some unbelievable shots, man. It was fun to watch.
It looked like you guys were having more fun than Clay.
Yeah.
I mean, he was going off, but you guys were going off even more so. What was it like over there on the bench and just in the locker room after the game? I mean,
you don't see that too often, you know. It's to have a guy that can run off 60 points like that and score so quickly, you know, we were just trying to encourage him and support him over there. And I know he's seen it, and, you know, I think that gave him a little, you know, he was already energized, but another extra jolt of energy as we were over there cheering for him. So that was amazing. 29 minutes, man. 60, that's crazy. Yeah, it was fun to watch.
Did part of you guys want to see him play the fourth and try and go for 80?
Nah, he should have had 80, to be honest. He missed, I want to say, he took 14 threes. He missed all those, the six he missed were probably open. Yeah, he missed a free throw. He got his layup blocked a couple times. So we talked about it on the bench. He said he should have had 70, but I said, man, you could have had 80 plus if you'd have, you know. But he had to be perfect to do that. But 29 minutes, 60 points, that's enough. Come sit down.
Few things about that quote. And the reason I used it is because it helps me collect my thoughts about how impressed I was. One, Kevin Durant is one of the most impressive scorers on earth, right? I mean, we've talked about that a million times. This was such an impressive feat, it literally left him speechless at first when they asked him about it, which says everything you need to know. Two, they talk about the bench participation, how much fun these guys are starting to have. That's an issue we've talked about a lot on this show, how important it is, and the idea that he would bring it up when talking about how impressive something on the floor is, it only illustrates that, yeah, that they are kind of really enjoying each other and that it is a big part of this team, you know?
And was a little over the top. I mean, Steph running out into, like, that. The locker room tunnel.
I love that. But, like, where was he going? And have you ever done that? Have you ever done the uncontrollable run celebration?
No.
Because generally you only see that in And1, which is no longer a show, you know? But, like, they used to have those moments in And1 where someone would have something and then people would literally uncontrollably run under the court. You know, like you'd sometimes see that in professional wrestling too, when they throw you against the ropes and you can't stop yourself from running. So I like that. It was kind of a throwback to things I haven't seen for a while. But the other thing that Durant's quote kind of got me thinking, so at the end there, he's talking about how he and Clay are on the bench during the fourth quarter because neither of them play, and that Clay brings up, look, I should add 70. And he said it the right way. He's not saying I should have kept playing. He's saying that I should have hit the shots that happened within the game and I shouldn't have had some shots blocked and I should have hit some open three-pointers. But if he's talking about how many points he could have had, then I think he cared about being able to go above 60. And I think, this is just me, it's not like I've talked to Clay, I think he would have liked to have been out there for the fourth quarter.
Wouldn't you? If you were that on fire, I would never want the game to end. I would want to play forever and ever.
Now, would you bitch? Would you say, I mean, like, would you casually bring it up to Kerr? Like, you know, Kobe had 82 and I wouldn't mind a shot at that. Or do you just sit back and do what you got to do? I mean, it is what it is. We're all sacrificing personal gain. Only go for the team's success.
I think that he would only go for the team's success. And I think that is the appropriate professional way to handle it. That's not to say, though, that, and I don't know, maybe a guy like Clay who is able to get into these zones in a way that certainly right. I was not able to do and a lot of other players can't do, maybe he is like, well, I'll get in some zone another day. Yeah. For me, I'd like, just please never take me out. I just let me ride this until it ends.
It would drive me crazy too, but I think that you are right. I don't think that he cares, and it's because I think Clay is just a different dude. He's just his own guy. Like, what's important to him is just what's important to him. The most recent illustration of that was this paper airplane thing. Did you follow that at all?
Yeah, where he made a paper airplane at the end of a press conference.
Okay, so they have a press conference with Clay, and Clay answers all the questions. Everything's going fine. They finish out the questions. They're literally just waiting for him to get off the podium, and this happens.
Rick, is that it?
Thank you.
Nice.
Yeah. Good job, sir. I should get this on camera. I'll make the best paper airplane.
on the West Coast.
I hit my guy in the camera right there. Look at that. Woo!
So some gets lost there in translation because you guys aren't able to watch the video. While he announces that, yeah, I'm a really good maker of paper airplanes, he's actually folding up a piece of paper and then throws it into the back row of the media. That's a really weird thing to do. Just, I mean, like, look, I understand that we accept superstars and we say whatever it is that they do is cool because they're good enough at sports that anything else they lend their hand to, we laugh and think it's really awesome. Honestly, like, if you and I were talking about anything, just about anything, and our conversation ends, and without any in-between or anything, I bust out a piece of paper, slowly fold it into a paper airplane, and then throw it across the room while announcing to you that I'm excellent at it, you would leave the room thinking that I was strange. That is an off-putting, weirdo thing, and it makes me think that Clay has the perfect mentality to be a shooter. He doesn't care about outside perceptions. Like, none of that. He's in his own world. It's his own movie. He does whatever the hell he wants, whenever the hell he wants to. And if you don't like it, I don't think he cares.
I mean, imagine, they'd be weird if you did that at the end of just a regular conversation, but imagine in a professional setting where you're on the job, on the work site,
right,
and you just do this in the middle of a meeting.
Just like, whoa, what's happening there? No, I am.
And I hate it. I don't know if you saw, the camera pans around and everyone's kind of like laughing like they have to like support this type of weird behavior.
Well, that fits into the whole he's a superstar, so we just pretend like, oh, no, what you're doing is cool. But no, that was super weird. Kind of a tangential question, but I can see you being really good at paper airplanes. What's your paper airplane?
I am a great paper airplane.
Oh, yeah.
I would love to challenge Clay. I will take him on as the best maker of paper airplanes on the West Coast.
How, like, what would the competition be based on? Like, how far a flight? Like, how sturdy they are? What goes into a good paper
airplane? It'd be a multi-category judging competition because there's the look. You know, I do like a nice sleek, almost like a Blackbird or SR-71
oh, wow.
Blackbird
oh,
type
wow.
deal.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, then you have distance, maneuverability in the air. You kind of do little circles.
You know, let's reach out to Raymond Ritter and see if we can't set this up. Man, I love Clay, but my money may be on you, Scotty D. Just the fact that you used that Blackbird reference, like a Briss. I had no idea what that was, but it sounded very, very impressive. That game, this is the Pacer game, everyone was impressed. It wasn't just Clay. The Warriors ended up with 142 points, and it made me tweet out a vote and ask people, do they think the Warriors would ever actually score 150? 95% of the people who responded said yes. What do you think? Do you think this team ever beats 150?
I do think so. They were at 142 that game, and I think that, yeah, certainly. They're going to have another night where not only is Clay on fire, but somebody else is on fire, and that's going to be the night.
I'm going to say no, which is weird since I'm always the over-optimist. I think it's going to require a terrible defensive performance, which is weird to say. But what we saw with Clay is that when they have these offensive outbursts, it means all the starters are going to sit. So by the fourth quarter, now you're talking about not scrubs, but you're talking about a second unit, and they're not going to have the motivation to keep the pedal to the metal to get to that 150.
I guess, is this 150 in regulation?
No. I mean,
if you throw overtime right. and some double overtime, well, definitely.
Houston, they had double overtime, and they scored 135. Or the Warriors scored less. I mean, they had like 127, I think. So even the double OT doesn't guarantee it. But I think what it would require is some, you know, fire sale. Both teams need to be just running up the score, zero defense that would get them there. In fact, I think they could score 170 if they got into a game like that. But I don't think we're going to see it. Their defense is too good.
Who's our bean counter?
Our master of stat is Damian T. Damian, if you're out there, go ahead and add this to this list. Scott, I bet you 10 beans that says the Warriors this year will not score over 150 points. Will not score 150 or over.
Yeah, book it. Regulation and overtime is included.
It is. No qualifications. No. Bet. All right. Let's jump into a would you rather. We haven't done those for a while. For people out there who haven't been listening long enough to know the segment, we consider two possible realities and then we pick which one would we rather do. Should be called this or that. I'm not sure why we don't call it this or that, but you know, look, man, it is what it is.
I'm going to edit this part out.
No, keep it because it's fantastic. Here's our first would you rather. You have to bet $100 on one of these two things, all right? Would you rather bet $100 that Draymond never hits another guy in the balls, hands, feet, no ball contact whatsoever, or that Harrison Barnes gets another max contract?
I would rather do that Harrison Barnes gets a max contract.
Really? Why?
Because Draymond, despite his kinesthesiology and his...
Oh, good word, man. Wow.
All that, you know, movement. He is still kicking people and still doing that. Like, that one against Harden was not... I've seen replays of some other people who are really on this, you know, lobbying hard against Draymond for still doing this type of thing. You can find the replays out there. He's still doing it.
Harrison Barnes couldn't get another max contract if he's flipped over to the WNBA. There's no... And also, let me say, he's playing really well. He's playing way better than any of us thought. His points per game are close to 20. I mean, he's doing remarkably well. But what a max contract is going to mean the next time his contract is up, it's going to be like a $200 million contract. I refuse to believe that that's going to happen. There is no way I'd put it there. Now, it pains me to put money on whether or not Testicle Draymond will, in fact, hit another guy on the balls, but that's where my money would be, man. I feel like that's a much safer bet. All right, last topic. Last time we recorded, we crowned a new reigning Are You Smarter Than a Bandwagon Fan champion in Jericho Faustino, the self-proclaimed people's champion. I was impressed. I'm not going to tell you I wasn't impressed. I was really impressed. He went way further. Let me put it this way. He went far enough where I was worried that we were going to run out of questions and I was going to have to make up something on the fly, which was not going to be pretty for anybody. So we have him out there and we've got to pick a new challenger. Thankfully, we have one ready to go, yeah?
Yes, we do.
All right, let's hear from our new challenger.
Yeah, hi, my name is World B. Spreewell, and I'm in my late 40s, early 50s ballpark. I was born in San Francisco, California. Been a Warrior fan pretty much my whole life. I'm really a basketball fan. And because I grew up in the East Bay, I became a Warrior fan. My favorite Warrior and why, probably my, I have a few. Bernard King is on my list. I was a big fan of Jay Rich's. I dig the new guys, of course, obviously. Curry, Clay, Draymond. I was a big Bogut fan. So I got a bunch of Warrior, you know, favorite Warriors. Mully, Timmy. It goes on and on. My least favorite Warrior has got to be Corey Maggette, also known as Bori Regretti. Man, that guy was hard to watch. What a bad signing that was. I'm not sure if I'm smarter than a bandwagon fan. I may have more obscure facts stuck in my pathetic brain. I may not. We'll see. It'll be fun to try and find out. I think this is a cool idea. I'm glad to be part of it. I'm a big fan of WarriorsWorld.net. And Warriors Huddle does great stuff as well. So it's just cool. And wish me luck. Maybe I'll get part of my 15 minutes of fame up in this mug. Peace.
I'm going to go ahead and guess that World B. Spreewell is a fake name. I mean, maybe not. Maybe he has a really unusual and remarkably cool name, but I'm just going to throw that out there.
I'm going to say that this might be Josh again. Like, he sounds surprisingly like Josh trying to make some different voice, and he's got this fake name.
I would respect the hell out of it if Josh came back, but he was embarrassed enough, I think, at the last one that I'd be very surprised if he's putting on a fake mask. I'll go first. Let me start by taking some shots at World B. Spreewell. Kind of a slow announcement there. It took a little while to get through all of his takes. And if I'm being honest, I got a little bored a couple of times as we ventured through it. But he has my vote. And here's why. He strikes me as a guy who has old school knowledge. He's not going to panic at all. He clearly goes way the hell back. He's going to take his time. This is my vote, man. I'm thinking World B takes the championship right out of Faustino's hands.
I'm sticking with the people's champ because this World B Spreewell, the guy doesn't even get his name right, number one. Number two, he doesn't even seem to know his own age. What is this, like 40, 50 ballpark?
I mean, he's not trying. He doesn't need to give up his privacy. He's just giving you a sense. He doesn't need to give you any specifics.
He can't even answer basic questions. He has like three responses for every question. Just... You can't do that during the game. You can't say, well, if it's this person, then no. There's going to be one answer, and it's going to be Jericho, people's champ.
I'm not going to tell you that he wasn't a little verbose. If this was a competition to make a really entertaining introduction, then it would be Jericho's victory for sure. I mean, what, did I not check my watch a couple times while World B was talking? I did. But I still think that that shows the kind of suave confidence that a man in his 40s, however old it was that he said that he has, 50, whatever, and a man in his ballpark age should have. He's going to come with it. In fact, I got, Damien, you out there listening? I got 5 beans on my boy World Be Free.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, no, trust me, he could have some knowledge. I'm not saying he might not have knowledge, but I think this one is with Jericho.
Well, I guess we will find out. Huge fun, you guys. Please remember, if you want to reach out to us, let us know how bad we were this week. Any hate mail you want to give us, if you want to weigh in on World Beast Freewell v. Jericho Faustino, you can hit us up at warriorshuddle@gmail.com. Our Twitter account is still at Warriors Huddle. We are on a bunch of podcasting services and websites. Our website remains warriorsworld.net. Our podcasting can be found on iTunes, vSporto, and a series of other ones. And we've been getting your guys' reviews on iTunes. Thank you so much. I don't think Scott cares that much about them, but I check for them literally every minute.
No, that means a lot. That's really how you get put on the map in the podcasting world.
There you go. So if you guys could continue to give us those, it'll take you 8 seconds, but it'll mean the world to us. We'd really appreciate it. Huge fun. Go Warriors, and hopefully we'll see you next week.
Good.